For example, to follow up your comment about the horrific nature of some of the history, and to illustrate your point, page 78, that paragraph right there, the one that starts on 78 and goes into 79, I think is a good example of what you're saying.
Heading south to Tiberius's grotto, where the emperor dined with guests and sometimes murdered them for entertainment, we drive along fields charred by fire. Eucalypts hang miserably, half burned. There is a lot that's missing in this landscape. The bus window braids a garland of grapevines, pizza ovens for sale, fields of busted, rotting watermelons, pink oleanders pouring over guardrails, sunflowers.
That was one of the questions I had at the very end. What lessons do you think there are for people who live in an empire now in decline from an empire that's been dead for a long time? You felt a little, it seemed like you were feeling comfort about that.
Yeah.
And we'll get through it.
Yeah. I mean, we might not get through it, but the next generation will get through it. It's kind of how I feel, like, if you're looking at geologic time, you know, that this is an absolute blip. This is like...
Well, Trump is no Nero.
Right.
Not yet.
Trump is like the profile of a face on a coin, you know? And like in Rome, you go into a museum and there'll be just like a trough of coins of different politicians' profiles on them or something. And for me, that's strangely a comfort.
I'm looking forward to the end of his presidency.
If you go to Jackson and 30th, you can see a day counter that's counting down the days and has been since the beginning. And in fact, the house was sold, but was sold with a condition that they keep the Trump end of regime counter going. I forget exactly what they call it, but I hear they have quite a good deal of Instagram followers. Two more questions. 83, do you expect to be living in 2,000 years? Too bad. That's what it said. Do you expect to be living 2,000 years from now? No? Well, too bad. You will be. And your parents are everyone who's come before you and everyone who's with you now, regardless of age.
What do you think that means?
Well, I totally agree with your parents are everyone who's come before you, and you're all your ancestors inside of you. And their only opportunity for changing things is through you. And I think if you listen hard, you can hear them, and they are informing you. They may be the sources of poems at times, or they may be like Yeats. They may be metaphors, bringing you metaphors for your verse. That's what I believe.
Absolutely.
But you're the authors.
Absolutely. Being in Rome, the ancient and the present exist in the same space. And in the same time, because as a traveler, you're there witnessing it. And we think that we understand time and past, present, future. But I think one of the things about being in a city like Rome is the past, present, and future all exist in the same street.
Yeah.
Well, and, you know, as a writer, you also get to choose your ancestors. You get to highlight certain ancestors, and that's one of the wonderful parts of the process. You know, you can have your stack of books with the ancestors that you want to be thinking about.
Who are yours?
I always have a hard time with that question, but I actually love reading Sappho's Fragments, and I love Fragment. I was really into Sylvia Plath's Ariel for a while, so that voice. And in the last many years, I've become interested in the essay form. So I go back and I read Montaigne, but I also read contemporary voices who are interested in playing with that first person too, and in blending the personal experience with data, I would say. But yeah, there's, you know, right now I'm reading Baudelaire's Little Poems in Prose, and that's been really fun. Mm-hmm.
Page 105, last paragraph, Elizabeth. Please read and please elaborate on that last line, both of you.
In Caravaggio's The Inspiration of St. Matthew, the angel above him swoops down to recite to him what he is to write. The angel is in the shape of an ear. Writing is listening. Well, you keyed in on definitely one of my favorite lines in the book, and I think certainly maybe the insight for Thomas and myself, that writing is listening. I think, you know, we are very different writers and we have very different personalities, but that is where we come together without a lot of argument, I think. Mm-hmm. Which is rare for us. Mm-hmm. To not have a debate. But we have no debate about that idea.
I agree. Writing is there's no day without night. There's no life without death. There's no writing without listening. Writing is listening. Listening happens. Listening informs the pen. And the better you listen, the better you write, I think.
I would include, I'm really visual, so I would include looking.
Listening is, yes.
Listening we're using metaphorically.
All the senses.
Grabbing on with your senses. Yeah.
I think we can leave it there. Really grateful to the access to your minds and to a deeper insight into this book. It's a beautiful book.
Thanks for reading it.
Thank you, Paul. Yeah.
Easy to read. Yeah.
You know, in one way it's an easy thing to read, but in another way it's very dense. You know, you can't just, you know, read this, just sit down and take it on a beach and read it straight like that. I don't think you can do that. And I say that in a good way, because I think work that makes you think, that has some thought into it, that has that each little paragraph could be a window to something else, to something very deep, you can't really just rip through that. You have to read it in hunks, I think.
We hope that it resonates outside of the book as well. The book doesn't end when the book is over. It resonates outside the book. Maybe every writer hopes that.